from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Earlier today, President Obama made his first visit to the Philippines, where he held talks with President Benito Aquino and praised the newly signed 10-year defense cooperation agreement the two countries made. The deal would give the U.S. military a greater presence in the Philippines at a time when the country is facing territorial disputes with China.
Our goal is not to counter China. Our goal is not to contain China. Our goal is to make sure that international rules and norms are respected.
We'll talk about U.S.-Philippine relations and President Obama's visit with a group of local Filipino-Americans, and we want to hear from you. Are you from the Philippines? Do you have friends or family there? Post your comments now on our website, kqed.org/forum, or on our Facebook page. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum program, our second hour. As part of President Barack Obama's four-country Asian trip, he visited the Philippines today in the wake of protests there over an agenda stressing security and trade agreements that many Filipinos, both in the Philippines and here in the United States, support. The president praised the newly signed 10-year defense cooperation agreement, which was signed earlier today between the United States and the Philippines. It would essentially give the United States military a greater presence in the Philippines at a time when that nation is involved in territorial disputes with China. This morning's second forum hour, we want to focus on the American agenda in the Philippines and discuss the U.S.-Philippine relationship with members of the Bay Area Filipino-American community. And joining us in studio is Rodel Rodiz. He's attorney, former trustee of City College of San Francisco, also president of U.S. Pinoys for Good Governance and president of Global Filipino Diaspora Council. Welcome.
Well, good morning, Michael.
Good to have you with us. I also want to say good morning to Terrence Valen, who has been with us before, president of the National Alliance for Filipino Concerns. Welcome again back to the forum.
Thank you for having us.
And Jay Gonzalez is here as well, professor of politics and Philippine studies at Golden Gate University. Excuse me. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And Odette Keeley joins us again here on Forum, New American Media host and executive producer of New America Now, New America Media's TV program on Comcast Hometown Network. Welcome, Odette.
Good morning, Michael. Pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you here. And let me begin with you. This let's talk about this agreement first. This means, first of all, no permanent bases, but it does mean that there are going to be a military presence again with respect to not only I think it's called the Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement, which means lighter jets and ships that will be on the ready. But really, this is because of South China Sea, isn't it, mainly?
Absolutely, Michael. Michael, both in-house coverage for New America Media on our news exchange and also from content from our Filipino-American Philippine media outlets, there's been an extensive coverage of the visit and the stakes of the visit of President Obama in the Philippines, and the coverage of that has started several months ago with the lead up to the signing in the now signed 10-year defense pact, as you said, the Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement. U.S. officials and Philippine officials very quick to say that this will follow the Philippine Constitution, follow Philippine laws. It will not pave the way to the return, the permanent return of the U.S. bases, but it has met a lot of criticism from even Philippine legislators, from sectors, for example, that NAFCON represents. Protests. There have been clash of protests outside in the streets of Manila. And it's really in the context of absolutely that U.S. pivot, the rebalancing of resources and focus of the United States from the Middle East and now to the Asia-Pacific region because of what is being seen as China's buildup of its might militarily, what is being seen in some sectors as its aggression over its neighboring countries. And what we saw, I just looked at and monitored the headlines from the websites of Philippine and Filipino-American media. Of course, yesterday, Manila time, the president of the United States arrived and they had a joint press conference with President Aquino after the bilateral trade meeting and the bilateral discussions. And in that joint press conference, what was really key was journalists asking that question that has been raging for several months. Will the United States come to the aid of the Philippines, as it seems to have promised to Japan just some days before, if China does enter into a conflict with the Philippines over the standoff on the West Philippine Sea or South China Sea? And there is intense focus on what President Obama has said. He reiterated the vow of support of the United States for the Philippines as its longtime defense ally. But yet, there was what people have seen as a non-committal to rush to aid. He said, we are not going to counter China. He said this is not containment,
but he also said we're not going to counter China, which seems to be in some ways maybe a cross-purposes.
And some people see that as a different stance from what he has said to Japan.
What is the nervousness, though, on this? I mean, certainly U.S. possession of the Philippines would last until 1946. There's concern about military bases because of toxic waste, because of prostitution problems, because of American soldiers involved in all kinds of activities that unfortunately have been transgressive. And so, but there's also seems to be a lack of trust that Americans are going to respect Philippine sovereignty.
Key to the issue surrounding military action, expanded military access, has always been sovereignty. And what they say are in the parameters of this new EDCA, the Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement, is that there will be no extrajudicial, you know, extra rights that American servicemen were able to enjoy when the U.S. bases were actually there. So there is this continuous stressing of the point that the EDCA, this new defense pact, will not violate any parts of the Philippine Constitution, that they will only do upon invitation when there is a need to preposition troops and equipment and resources. But many sectors are still critical. The Philippine Senate, outspoken Senator Miriam Defensor Santiago, saying this didn't even pass through the Philippine Senate. It wasn't reviewed. And why was it only the Philippine defense chief and the U.S. ambassador that signed it? A lot of questions. A lot of questions, of course, coming from the leftist spectrum, the leftist sector, seeing this as yet another new ushering in a new era of U.S. military expansion.
Well, I want to talk about trade, too, which was right up there at the top of the president's agenda. But first, since you're talking about concerns of those sort, I wanted to bring Rodel Rodis into this discussion because he also is a columnist for the Philippine-based online publication Inquirer.net, and he's been raising some radioactive questions about past behavior of former presidents, President Aquino and Estrada, in terms of ceding things to China that they didn't have the right to cede to China.
That's right. The China's foreign ministry spokesman just a month ago said that both President Estrada in 1999 and President Arroyo in 2003 agreed to remove the Sierra Madre ship outside of Ayungin Shoal. And that is something that was never a part of any agreement. It was never in the newspapers. That was a surprise. And
that would have to be confirmed by the legislature.
Right. It would have to have been an actual agreement. Nothing has been signed or nothing has been presented. And that would have been a violation of the Constitution because a president cannot cede Philippine territory to another just like that, which is what they did.
We're talking about like annexation a la Crimea here with Russia?
Yes, exactly. I mean, the Ayungin Shoal and about nine other shoals and islands are within the 200-mile exclusive economic zone of the Philippines. So they belong to the Philippines. But China insists it owns 3.5 million square kilometers of the South China Sea and only recognizes a 12-mile limit for all the ASEAN countries involved. And unfortunately, Philippine presidents, whether they were bribed or whatever, agreed to let China have it. And this president is saying no. The president has brought to the United Nations Arbitral Tribunal its right to the 200-mile exclusive economic zone that China signed in 1992, the UNCLOS, United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea.
Let me. You are in support of the defense pact, though. You don't have any concerns about Philippine sovereignty?
Well, you know, Winston Churchill said that there are no permanent allies, only permanent national interests. And at one time, to be a nationalist was to be anti-U.S. imperialist. But now the situation has changed. Now to be a nationalist is to be anti-China imperialist. That China is a greater danger to the Philippines now than the U.S. was during the height of the Vietnam War and the period when the Philippines was used to wage an unjust war against Vietnam. Now we have a different different enemy. And when you have a different enemy, you have to make allies with others whom you need in order to play on an even, to have an even playing field.
I just want to give some information here that I thought was fascinating. Reading the Pew Research polls, the most favorable view of the United States among citizens of the world is in the Philippines. But also the concern about China replacing the United States and eclipsing it in terms of empire. The question was put, do you think this is going to happen or will it never happen? The highest number of never were also in the Philippines. And we're talking about globally, according to Pew Research. I want to bring you into this, Professor Gonzalez. Let's talk about trade and what really is going to benefit the Philippines in terms of the possibility of a trade agreement. This would be free trade, and this would, according to some, bring in the multinationals, you know, open the doors for Monsanto and Cargill.
Mm-hmm. Well, the relationship between China and the Philippines is also big in terms of trade. The relationship between the Philippines and the United States is big in terms of trade. But the scale of the two is very different, you know. The Philippine trade with China has now, increased significantly from way back when, the U.S. was the main trading partner. As a trading bloc, too, the Philippines is a member of ASEAN. And ASEAN is number three in terms of, global trade with China. Number one, of course, is the European Union. Number two is the United States, and number three is ASEAN as a trading bloc, the 10 ASEAN countries. So trade is a big factor in the region.
But most Philippine citizens want closer ties with the United States, do they not?
Absolutely. Even though it is not as significant as a trading partner as before, most Filipinos still would like to have close ties with the United States. And it's because of the Filipino global diaspora that's in the United States. I think that's the primary reason. There's close to 4 million Filipino Americans, and these 4 million Filipino Americans would like to have good relations with, the other homeland, you know, the Philippines.
The economy is moving upward in the Philippines, but not necessarily where the poor are concerned. They're kind of left out of this whole picture still.
That's the biggest problem there, Michael, is, the redistribution. The Philippine economy is growing. It's next to China in Asia in terms of growth rate. But the distribution to the poorest of the poor is still the biggest question. The main beneficiaries are the rich who have always, who've been rich for the past more than 300 years.
But the I want to get to the Trans-Pacific Partnership free trade deal because it hit a setback in Japan. The United States and Japan actually stopped short of announcing a deal vital to that partnership. Where's the Philippines in this?
Well, the Philippines, as you heard from President Obama, the Philippines is also hesitating in a way. And that's why in the speech of President Obama, he's nudging the Philippine president to move into the TPP and, the partnership. So it's like Japan, it has hedged.
But you think it would be good to have a trade agreement in the long run? I mean, not necessarily trickling down to the poor, but it would be good for the Philippines and their economy?
That's the biggest question. You have this trade agreement, but the main beneficiaries will again be big corporations in the Philippines and multinational companies. If there could be provisions that protect, of course, the social rights of the people on the ground and the environment, and all of these that are not included right now in the language of the trade agreement, then it would be a good trade agreement.
Well, let's hear from Terrence Vallon on this because I think he does not necessarily see this as a positive move. In fact, Terrence Vallon, you talked about being opposed to the whole idea of the pivot and the Trans-Pacific as being NAFTA on steroids.
Right. So Obama is there right now, and what they're talking about in terms of the Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement and the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, these are two huge moves. It's beyond sort of a dispute about the South China Sea. This is about shifting 60% of the U.S. military from the Middle East to the Asia-Pacific region, opening up the whole Philippines to military U.S. military exercises throughout the whole country using Philippine facilities where it sees fit.
Would they be dunning taxpayers the way it's in South Korea as well?
So that's what we've heard in South Korea. We recently had a teach-in where folks from South Korea were talking about how taxpayers in South Korea are building a lot of these military facilities that the U.S. is benefiting from. But the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement is even, I think, as Jay mentioned, a much larger scale. This is 40% of the GDP of the whole world that we're talking about in the Asia-Pacific region. And the social rights that he said should be part of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement are not just not there, but actually are opposed to what's being proposed in the agreement. In both of these trade agreements and the defense cooperation agreement, we don't know, actually, because these things have been negotiated in secret. The people, you know, of the Philippines and in these countries around the world don't know what's actually in there. We're hearing from WikiLeaks, what's leaked out from WikiLeaks in terms of what's actually in the agreements, that they actually roll back in labor, environmental rights, the tariff that local countries would put on trade. And these ways, rolling back all of these social rights, are things that, you know, we need to oppose because it actually undermines the development of the Philippines. It allows foreign corporations to actually sue governments, including the Philippine government, if it becomes part of the TPP. Currently, the Philippines is not one of the 40 countries that are included, but Aquino and Obama are pushing for that to happen.
So you don't see it really as being all that beneficial for the Filipino people. But what about the military forces moving into the Philippines in terms of this? I mean, they're not permanent bases. And do you see diplomatic solution possibility with China?
So, you know, in terms of the military agreements and the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, these are things that we've actually seen the results of. NAFTA on steroids is what I mentioned because we've seen the results of NAFTA and its impacts on Mexico and other Latin American countries, the devastation of their local economies and their national economies. In terms of military presence of the U.S. in the Philippines, you mentioned earlier the toxic waste, the trampling on the sovereignty of, you know, Philippine people's rights. And we've seen over the past several years, the U.S. has been in the Philippines. The U.S. military has been in the Philippines. There have been over 350 port calls from 2007 to 2012, over, you know, 500 to 1,000 troops in southern in Mindanao, in the southern part of the Philippines. There was a leakage or a spillage of 4 million liters of sewage when the Philippines was at different ports across the country in Cebu in October 2012. And then the damage to the Tubutaha Reef system in the Philippines, over 2,000 square meters when U.S. naval ship. None of this has been accounted for by the U.S. military and paid for by the U.S. military. Human rights violations, as you mentioned, and others. So we don't know the content of this defense cooperation agreement, and that's been the history of it. While we've had visiting forces agreements, the mutual defense treaty, all of these haven't allowed the Philippines to actually hold the U.S. accountable for transgressions on Philippine sovereignty.
Well, we'll hear from some of the other panelists in response to, but let me get you on record something else, if I may, Terrence, and that is immigration concerns, because at this point, you want temporary protective immigration status, to stop the deportations and to allow aid to go in, yeah? I mean, that's kind of the nutshell of where you're at, isn't it?
Right. For the Filipino community here in the United States, there's, as Jay mentioned, close to 4 million Filipinos here, and up to a quarter of that, or 1 million, are undocumented here in the U.S. Since the typhoon in November last year, you know, that was the opportunity to provide this temporary relief for Filipinos here in the United States so that they could earn money, send money back to the Philippines without fear of being deported. So we've been part of a national effort called Relief to Recovery to allow Filipinos to, you know, live and work here without fear of deportation, support their families back in the Philippines, and help the recovery of the Philippines. So we were hoping that Obama there would speak to that as well, and also to other issues that were raised recently. There was a church community that recently went to Washington, D.C., across the country, talking about the human rights violations in the Philippines. And they were also mentioning that, you know, as the U.S. continues its aid in different forms, military aid should be restricted based on the continuing human rights violations in the Philippines.
Let me go back to trade and the military presence. And Rodel Ruiz, you want to respond to what you heard essentially here from Terrence Valen?
Yes. First of all, with regards to the temporary protected status, TPS, that is something that unites all Filipino organizations, community organizations, all the groups that I'm with in the U.S., including NAFA, National Federation of Filipino American Associations. We have all been working together for the most part to get the Department of Homeland Security to grant TPS status to the Philippines. Now, many of us were hoping that somehow, in connection with President Obama's visit, he would announce it. But we were also saying that from a policy standpoint, it would not be wise for the president to link the two. It would appear like it was a form of bribery to quid pro quo. So it is on its way. We understand Secretary John Kerry has recommended TPS for the Philippines, which is a necessary step. And right now it's in the hands of the Department of Homeland Security, whether it will be full TPS for every Filipino in the U.S. or only those who came from or who come from the affected regions that were devastated by Typhoon Haiyan. So that's a separate issue. Now, as for the other issues that Terrence talked about, what hasn't been mentioned, yes, there have been great atrocities that have happened in the course of U.S.-Philippine relations. When I was in the Philippines as a student, I demonstrated against the U.S. Embassy protesting the U.S. military bases. But the reality now is different. I mean, we cannot base our policies or our decisions based on what happened in the past. We have to look to the future.
But Terrence Valen says we don't know what the future is going to be. We don't know how to really unravel what's in this pack because we're not getting the information. Jay Gonzalez, you want to weigh in here?
Well, you know, like Rodel, you know, I was in front of the U.S. Embassy protesting there, leading marches to the palace, during that time. But
you got a bunch of ex-radicals in here.
We're ex-radicals now. We're Americans
now.
But, I watched the scale of the protests, it is not the same scale and not the same intensity that I used to see. And Rodel is nodding his head because it's, you know, now you get 100 people there, but before it was 1,000 people.
Thousands
of people when we were leading protests. So it also is an indication that, people in the Philippines have toned down in their views and they're respecting, some of the reasons by the government, the need for security. They're more sophisticated. They know how, that China is really a looming presence in the region. So they're understanding that.
Plus, still waiting for General MacArthur to return.
Well, they're waiting for their relatives to return because, their loyalty is to the money that flows from the United States to the Philippines. And a lot of their relatives here are saying, hey, we're Americans too. If you are protesting against, the United States, you are protesting against us. And remember, we're the ones sending money to you.
In fact, we should mention there are over 3.4 million Americans who trace their ancestry to the Philippines. The greatest concentration is here in the West. And from reading work by Rodel Rodis, I discovered something that I was utterly ignorant about, which is that there were four waves of Filipino immigration. 5 million came in 1587. Landing at Moro Bay. They were called Indios.
Not 5 million.
I'm sorry. I said 5 million. Let me retrace that. That was the first wave. 1587, though, I mean, we're talking about Moro Bay landing. They were called Indios Luzones. And this is before Plymouth Rock, obviously. We're coming up on a break. Odette, you want to say something?
Very, very quickly. And I have to admit yet another part of my past as well. I've been on those demonstrations in Mendiola back in my days in the University of the Philippines.
Everybody's coming clean.
Yeah, but let me just quickly add, and I know Terry knows this very well, the militant party list group.
Hold that thought, because we're coming up on a break. Right. You hear the music here. And let me give the phone number so listeners can join us. And I want to invite you to, particularly if you have connections to the Philippines, if you're a Filipino-American or if you have family who are in the Philippines, we'd like to hear from you. But you may want to join us for whatever reason if you have questions or comments about President Obama's visit to Manila and the trade agreement that has been hammered out. It's in the works. The defense agreement, has been hammered out. I'm stammering over my words here. 5 million defense and everything else. Our toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. You can join us now at our toll-free number. Feel free to do that. 866-733-6786 or email us, forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Bay Area Filipino Americans are closely watching President Obama's visit to Manila, and An agreement, a defense agreement, was hammered out today, and you may want to comment on that agreement, or you may want to join us in conversation here. We have a whole panel of Bay Area Filipino-Americans with us in studio. Jay Gonzalez, who's professor of politics and Philippine studies at Golden Gate University, and Terrence Valen, who is president of the National Alliance for Filipino Concerns, and Rodel Rodiz, who is an attorney and president of U.S. Pinoys for Good Governance, as well as the Global Filipino Diaspora Council. If you are a Filipino-American, or if you have ties to the Philippines, or simply if you'd like to ask about the defense agreement that was reached or the trade agreement that is in the works, we welcome your involvement in the program. If you have thoughts about the pivot toward Asia, which President Obama has certainly tried to fortify in this trip to four different Asian countries, you may want to join us as well. Our toll-free number is available, and you can join us now, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And here's a comment from David on the on our Facebook page, who says, "I know the Philippines is worried about China, but he's talking about the defense deal. This is a shame, nonetheless. Prediction, they'll regret it." Odette Keeley, you were way in
I
here.
Was just coming clean as we were going to break, and I was just mentioning to Jay and Rodel and Terry that, in fact, my father was a colonel in the Philippine Army. So as I was marching in Mendiola, sometimes being the only woman arm-in-arm demonstrating, it does come to mind, and what we're seeing right now, Jay mentioned and Terry mentioned, there's a smaller scale of demonstrations. But one of the news that we're tracking is that the militant partyless group Bayan Muna is in fact looking into bringing the issue of EDCA, the Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement, to the Philippine Supreme Court, take a look into it and lobby for its closer scrutiny, because what they're questioning is the fact that it did not go through the Philippine Senate and the Philippine House of Representatives when it's a treaty. And that needs, and it does violate parts of the Constitution that requires it as so. We also talked about TPS and temporary protected status, and I just want to add a quick insight that in our reporting on the issue of TPS and what Filipino-Americans are thinking as we interviewed Filipino-American community members across the United States for New America Media, Filipinos have been holding interfaith vigils, demonstrations, have been gathering in groups. A lot of open letters have been sent to both President Benigno Aquino and President Obama, especially in the timing of this visit, to look into the approval of this. Of course, Rodel has said there's that political play into that, and the timing is very key. But what was really pointed out is that in the ravages, in the aftermath of the devastation of Typhoon Haiyan, for Filipinos who have expiring or have expired visas in the United States, for them to be able to stay legally and work legally, bring home the remittances, send those remittances, send aid, especially to families and communities that need it most, is something that has been pointed out.
Well, all this concern about military bases, and as I said, the United States has forsworn the idea of permanent bases, but the idea of militarization and American hegemony and warmongering and all the rest of this. I mean, I can certainly understand the picture here that emerges, but listeners may remember back in 2002, after 9/11, Al-Qaeda had links to Islamic militants in the southern part of the Philippines, and the United States sent 500 soldiers there for U.S. intelligence, anti-terrorism training, and so forth. That's still a threat, one would presume, wouldn't it? Professor Gonzalez?
It has never left, actually. When you think about it, we're talking about this enhanced defense cooperation agreement, but the United States has never left. There's always been a drone program in the south, in Basilan, which monitors the Abu Sayyaf and other al-Qaeda cells in the region. So it's a small contingent, low-key, that's there monitoring the situation. There are also annual Balikatan exercises, which are joint military exercises in the sea and on the land and in the air, that the U.S. and the Philippines and other partners have now been included, that happens annually. So this is nothing new. Terry mentioned the port calls. Port calls, continued access to Philippine ports is what the U.S. Military has always had. So there's nothing new in the situation.
So that doesn't bother you, Terrence Valen?
No, I mean, they are there. They've been there. Yeah. And you know, this is an internal conflict within the Philippines, so U.S. presence there only enhances or actually emboldens the Philippine military, which is actually guilty of so many human rights violations, 19 extrajudicial killings in the first few months of this year under the Aquino administration. So these are things that are happening, and these are, you know, the same concerns with an expanded presence of the U.S. military in the Philippines. You know, we say there's, you know, a few hundred or a thousand, up to 6,500 a year annually conducting these balikatang exercises. But with this new cooperation agreement, how many more? How long can they be there? These details are not, you know, known to any of us. And it rolls back the democratic victory we had in 1991, 1992, where we actually said no more U.S. military bases in the Philippines. The Senate approved that. And this new cooperative agreement has no input from the Senate or from the people of the Philippines. So these things that we don't know about how much more expansive the U.S. military presence will be is anti-democratic. And this is what people are protesting. Maybe small protests now, but this week you will see growing increase protests. And they've been throughout Asia, throughout his visits. These are from, you know, not just militant leftist radicals, but human rights groups, church groups, anti-war groups, anti-fair trade groups, environmental labor groups, people's organizations. The Philippine Senate is against this cooperative agreement because they did not have the ability democratically to say something about this treaty.
Mr. Rodriguez wants in here, but I know there's also been a concern about local firms being threatened and not ready for the kind of tough competition that would come in from integration. I mean, that's been a concern along with the multinationals. Rodel Rodriguez, you were going to add something?
Yes, I was just wanted to point out one of the problems when the Abu Sayyaf, that al-Qaeda group that kidnapped others, was that their boats were faster than the Philippine Navy boats that were sent to pursue them. And that's because the Philippines at that time and up to a few years ago only had 34 boats to patrol 34,000 nautical miles shoreline. Hardly adequate. The Philippine government was only allocating something like $50 million a year for defense. And under President Arroyo, she signed 63 agreements with China that allowed China to build, to set up 30 mining companies in the Philippines. In provinces all over the Philippines since Arroyo became president, Chinese mining corporations have been exhaustively removing the natural resources, nickel, cobalt, everything else, without going through or respecting Philippine environmental laws or even just license laws and labor laws. They're blatantly disregarding, extracting all of that and sending them to China. And the way that the situation in the Philippines is that many of the Chinese Filipino Taipans who have huge investments in China, they're the ones who finance the campaigns of many of these senators and members of Congress. So anything that goes through Congress is going to have the imprimatur, the backing of China's politicians in the Philippine Senate and the House, and they're going to stop whatever agreement there is because it's going to impact China, and China is the one that they're concerned with. So we have to take into account when we look at anything like a trade pact. Let's also examine the 63 trade pacts that Arroyo signed with China that have not surfaced, many of them. So we need to be able to look at the situation, and we need to be able to improve the Philippine military defense capabilities, not just against China, but even against pirates, against local terrorist groups like Abu Sayyaf.
There's also a bigger picture in all this, and that is the picture corruption, which has been an ongoing problem in the Philippines. I mean, the politicians can be bought, and I mean, not necessarily untrue in this country as well, but, you know, the fact of the matter is that corruption has been pervasive and an endemic problem for a long time now. Right. What you do about that, I mean, although the present administration, at least under President Aquino, has had at least some squeaky clean kind of imprimaturs by weigh in on that, Terrence Vailin?
Sure. I mean, President Aquino, in the pork barrel scandal that, you know, plagued the whole country and most of the Senate, President Aquino himself had his own kind of pot of that pork barrel. So he's not, you know,
not entirely clean.
The difference is that it wasn't a personal pork barrel, He used a presidential pork barrel to finance projects that that he supported. So there's been no taint that he personally profited from it, unlike many of the senators and members of Congress.
Well, what about Jay Gonzalez, the Chinese influence on politics in the Philippines? I mean, is it as strong as we're hearing from Rodel Rodriguez?
Well, they have because there's that influence. You know, the Philippines has the oldest Chinatown in the world. People don't realize that. And that there are strong links to China. So there's that influence that you will have. But I don't think it's as strong as the U.S. influence that in the legislature. There is influence, but it's not as big.
There's also problems going on vis-a-vis Singapore and the presence of, I guess, Philippine citizens of Singapore, a lot of them working for low labor costs and wanted to stage a Philippine independence celebration, and they were given a hard time by the Singapore government.
Well, annually, one of the largest Philippine Independence Day celebration is in Singapore. There's close to 100,000.
Coming
Filipino
up June
workers.
8th, in fact.
June 12th.
But they wanted to celebrate on June 8th.
That's right. And it's always been a tradition there. I lived in Singapore for 5 years, and I participated in this large Independence Day celebration. I've never seen it as big, even compared to the United States. And so that's a big signal that's being sent there if they're not allowing it.
In fact, there's a lot of xenophobia where Filipinos are concerned in Singapore, like there was here. You know, I remember reading, I think it's John Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men, where they talk about Manila Filipino gugus, you know, which is a way of essentially defaming Filipinos. I mean, it was like the N-word. It became certainly that kind of pejorative word. I'm sorry, Odette, you were going to say something
Michael,
here?
Michael, I wanted to just jump in here quickly, actually circling back a little bit to our discussion on the treaty, because I want to add a quick insight that almost feels like playing a bit of devil's advocate, because I'm really curious to kind of hear from the fellow panelists here. Setting aside or in the context of what has been pointed out, there's going to be an expanded military access through this treaty. Of course, it's ongoing, but you can only expect that it's much more expanded and increased a number of rotational troops. But some people are pointing out, in the very clear example of Typhoon Haiyan, or Typhoon Yolanda as it was known in the Philippines, what the U.S. Marines, what the U.S. Navy, what the U.S. military did in bringing in relief to that coastal town in Leyte, in Tacloban City, and into remote areas where people who were victims weren't even known or weren't even on the radar and were not being rescued. For the U.S. to be able to bring in more resources through this treaty, for the U.S. to be that ally, the United States is the only defense treaty ally of the Philippines, is there not benefits? Are we like shadowing or covering the benefits that could be in place when another disaster like this happens?
I'm going to read a tweet here from a listener named Carol. And by the way, you are certainly welcome to join us. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786, or email us if you'd like to join the conversation, forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments onto our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment. And our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Carol tweets, "We owe the Philippine Islands much. I visited there many times in the dark days of 1968, and part of my mind is always there. For a black man, it was a home." There's a sense of kind of props for openness to different races, especially after talking about Donald Sterling in the last segment, the owner of the Clippers and his alleged comments. Can we talk a little bit about the local community here, since I've got the four of you here? I mean, Daly City has been dubbed the capital of the Filipino-American
Manila
community.
Town,
Manila Town and all that used to be in San Francisco over on Kearney. Maybe Jay or Odette, talk about the changes in the local community. How high is the cost of living affecting people here?
Well, you can see Daly City is like 30% Filipino. And even though the cost of living has gone up, they are continuing to work, and they work harder to bridge that cost of living. Most Filipino families, if you look at the census figures, they're saying that they have one of the highest income levels, household income levels, and it's because there are more people in the Filipino family that work. So that's the cost. You don't see your children because you are into 2 to 3 jobs just to make sure you are living the American dream.
Okay.
Filipinos, all over the Bay Area, the issues, the struggles continue to be the same, especially in the aftermath of the recession. It's really gainful employment, the stability of the home, the economics, education, healthcare. Now we have the impacts of Obamacare. And one thing that we are closely reporting on in New America Media is really the intersection of tech and community and the way it's impacting the neighborhoods of South of Market, the neighborhoods of Mission, and where certain families are being evicted, elders are being evicted. And some of those Filipinos, South of Market was a gateway for the Filipino community here in the Bay Area. So these are continuing issues that look. And when I mentioned TPS too, that's so the temporary protected status, some people look at it as kind of like an interim solution to a comprehensive immigration system, the reform that's not yet happening, and which many have pointed out President Obama had committed to. And so this intertwining of TPS and immigration reform and about, I think there's so many numbers out there. Some have said 300,000 undocumented Filipinos. I think, Terry, you said about close to a million. I think it depends, you know, where the data comes from. But it's a sizable number. And these are key concerns, not only for undocumented Filipinos, Filipinos being deported, but also the reunification of Filipinos in the United States with their families still in the Philippines.
But this visit by the president had to do more with security cooperation and strategic role of the Philippines in the region and trade. Immigration, I don't even think came up, really, did it?
Right. No, and it cannot. Those are two separate issues, mm-hmm. so we understand that there are different dynamics involved.
But it demonstrates kind of the prioritization of why Obama is there. It's not about TPS, relief to recovery, the typhoon relief, mm-hmm. and these humanitarian efforts
this
that actually
really the geopolitical
help.
Positioning.
It's a geopolitical move militarily and economically. The communities of the Bay Area are, you know, continue to be strong, and we need to strengthen and fortify those through things like TPS. The numbers are declining in San Francisco because of gentrification and displacement. That's what we work on in Excelsior and Soma neighborhoods of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. We recently also got Tagalog certified as a third required language for city communications in the city of San Francisco. Finally, recognition of the historical and significant presence of Filipinos.
I saw that. That was a pretty mm-hmm. heavy lobbying effort on your right. part.
That was, you know, part of the work of the Filipino Community Center and NAFCON.
A listener writes, go ahead. This is Rodel Rodriguez.
Let me just point out that, you know, much has been said about what the U.S. Interests are in terms of this agreement, its rebalancing or whatever. And if we looked at it only in terms of what the U.S. interests are in this area, it wouldn't give the picture because we have to look at what is the Philippine interest in the area and why is it in the Philippine national interest. The problem many times is that many nationalists look at the situation from the prism of the past, and we really have to start looking at what's in the future. I mean, the U.S. is a power that is on the way down. General Motors is virtually owned by China right now. Certainly all the General Motors plants in China are owned by the Chinese. They were the number one sponsor of the most recent Chinese Communist Party Congress, General Motors. And it is important to understand that the Philippines has to be able to start preparing for what is the reality. China has made it very clear. It demands that the Philippines leave the islands that are being protected because it insists those islands or shoals belong to China as a result of a 9-dash line that was drafted
in
1947.
We haven't even mentioned how much natural gas and how much resources are there. I mean, we've been talking about all this territorial dispute, and it's very heavy in terms of gas and oil.
That's the future of the Philippines, is the billion barrels, about 50 billion barrels of oil under the Recto Bank and several quadrillion cubic feet of natural gas under the Recto Bank. And that was discovered when Arroyo allowed China to explore under this joint maritime security undertaking that she signed with China, that allowed China to explore the areas around Palawan, around the Philippine seas, and they discovered the oil under the Recto Bank, and that is what is propelling Chinese interest in moving in that area. We don't have the time without the U.S. support to be able to build up enough of a military defense capability to defend Philippine territory against China. So I favor this enhanced defense cooperation agreement because we need all the help we can get. China is a present threat and is going to continue to be a future threat. So the reader who said, we'll be sorry, we can also say, if we don't get into this agreement and the Philippines is overrun by China, then tell us we're sorry.
Now, this is the basic disagreement, I guess. And Terry Valenue.
Speculation. We've had decades, almost 100 years of U.S. military presence in the Philippines. As Jay mentioned, it has not modernized the Philippine military. We're still in the position of one of the weakest militaries in Asia, with the U.S. having been there for almost a century. And in terms of the economic situation as well, those resources should be part of the Philippines. The sovereignty of the Philippines over those territories, over its national economy, over its military, need to be the fundamental part of any of these negotiations and trade agreements, the conflict with China. But these need to be worked out with the interests of the people in the Philippines in mind.
Do you think there's a real possibility, though? I mean, looming under this discussion is the historical relationship between the United States, which was one of essentially hegemony. I mean, the United States would come back in and really threaten Philippine sovereignty or become an occupational power again or dominate again in a way that it has in the past?
That's been demonstrated, and that's what we know of U.S. military presence and economically as well. So if we, you know, have the same kind of treaties which have undermined the economies of Mexico and several Latin American countries under NAFTA, this is NAFTA on steroids. So the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement has exploited the Philippine economy, or can exploit the Philippine economy in the way that the U.S. has exploited it for years.
All right, let me read a comment from a listener online who says, being an American citizen who's gone through all the turmoil in the Philippines and now doing business on both sides of the Pacific, your guests have no idea of the threat China poses and the national sentiment in the Philippines on the need for a friendly country's support to help protect its sovereignty. Those that oppose the U.S. presence are in the minority. They also are mostly extremely left-leaning radicals and are living in the past and have outlived their purpose. It seems they also want to perpetuate the extreme corruption in the government for their own benefits.
And I think there are also people in the Philippines who are asking this question, right? If China is becoming rich and they're, you know, it's always growing, it's sustained growth over a period of time, there are a lot of Philippines are saying, so why are they so interested in this? I think we need to think about the Chinese perspective too, which is that if you compare China and the United States alone, there's more arable land in the United States than China. But China has 1.3 billion people. And to sustain the growth for 1.3 billion people means a lot of resources and claiming a lot of spaces where it could extract resources to feed 1.3 billion people.
I'm also sorry to say this, but I think about the Chinese army compared to the Philippine army. And there's a reality there. But let me read another listener comment here. Mm-hmm. How can any treaty benefit the masses in the Philippines where corruption is rampant at all levels of the Filipino government? According to friends who were also Yolanda victims, a lot of the resources donated from the United States and the international community were diverted to grocery stores for sale while the government officials pocketed the profits. Does the Philippine president have any plan to address the corruption? Let me bring on some callers here, and we'll hear from Dominic first. Dominic, go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to highlight a point. It was mentioned earlier about the workers' rights in the Philippines not, you know, being violated, and I wanted to highlight that it's actually the same thing is being done right here in the Bay Area and throughout California. I'm a law student at Golden Gate University, and I work in the Women's Employment Rights Clinic. And a lot of cases we get Filipino-owned residential care facilities who then employ undocumented, sometimes documented, Filipino workers and take advantage of those workers from wage violations to all sorts of things. And I think it's an issue that is extremely substantial to the conversation that hasn't really been addressed.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you brought it up.
This is work where we do it through the Filipino Community Center in NAFTA.
Terrence Bailey.
We've referred several of those cases to the Women Employment Rights Clinic at Golden Gate University and work with the attorneys there and the students in law school there. We've recovered over $1 million in back wages for Filipino caregivers, documented and undocumented, for being underpaid, less than a minimum wage, no overtime. All of this is a result of Filipinos having to migrate abroad, not being able to support themselves and their families in the Philippines, coming to a place even like the United States and facing wage theft, discrimination, exploitation and abuse like they do in Singapore and every other country around the world that they're in. So this is a huge industry that we're looking at.
Including Dubai and, all the Middle East now hiring labor at that. Let me get another caller on here. And Ramon joins us. Ramon, hi.
How you doing, sir? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to let you guys know that I served in Balikatan operations from 2002 to 2003. I was the first wave of 600 special operations. So we served down, you know, we came from Okinawa with the 1st Special Forces Group and went down to Edwin Air Force Base in Mindanao in Zamboanga, and then to Camp Relay and Camp Navarro. And then subsequently, we went directly into Basilan and to do advisors as training over there, and I think it's a good thing. We didn't just do counterterrorism. We did a lot of MEDCAPS. MEDCAPS is an acronym. It's Medical Civil Affairs and Humanitarian. We did about approximately 56 humanitarian operations there, building the villages in Tabiawan, Lamitan, Tawi Tawi, Holo, Sulu. So, you know, it was a good thing. It wasn't a bad thing, you know.
So you're in favor of this defense deal, Ramon?
I think it's a good thing, sir.
Yeah.
You know, at that time they call it Balikatan, which is just a, as you know, it's Operation Enduring Freedom, which is a, it's just a global war on terrorism operations. So it used to be called Freedom Eagle at that time. But a lot of the military there, the Philippine Armed Forces, benefited from our training there.
All right. I'm glad you spoke up here, and I thank you for that. And I'm looking at a tweet here that says, TPP benefits rich, not the majority of Filipinos who are poor. More corporations and military puts Filipinos in danger of war. So you're getting all kinds of different opinions weighing in here. And yet, the majority of Filipinos, Odette Keeley, are behind this agreement and behind the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement, as well as behind more military presence?
Michael, I think you're finding that there's really a lot of ambivalent reaction to this, a lot of splits, a lot of criticism, too.
There's a lot of division, I realize that, and ambivalence. But majority of Filipinos want the defense agreement and want the trade agreement?
Actually, I'm going to answer that by also kind of referring back to the caller, because what he's pointing out to us is where there are the benefits of the training and the resources that are coming in with the Balikatan exercises and what we can expect from this Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement. What is key, Michael, in any treaty between two nations is really the respect for the nation's accountability and oversight, the ability of the Philippines to have oversight, to have authority and control over how the treaty is being executed and implemented in its country, and to have, yes, that sovereignty about it.
We'll have to leave it there, and I want to thank all of you for this rich conversation, and we will continue to follow the events in the Philippines and the pivot that President Obama has spoken so much about. Thanks to Odette Keeley from New America Media, to Jay Gonzalez from Golden Gate University, Terrence Valen from the National Alliance for Filipino Concerns, and Rodel Rodis, who is President of U.S. Pinoys for Good Governance and Global Filipino Diaspora Council. And thank you, our listeners. We would not be here without you. We are here with you every Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. With an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. Thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and our producers, Judy Campbell, Irene Noguchi, and Tina Larberg. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.